Welcome to the Oldie Podcast. In this episode, timed with the August issue of the magazine, we have a piece by Sophia Money Coutts, the former features director at Tatler, where she worked for 5 years. The piece is on British manners, where she reveals that modern manners are frozen in Victorian aspic. But without giving too much away, she resolves that when everything around us is in such tumult, certain enduring habits can be reassuring, even comforting. At the start of the piece, you give an example of two elderly ladies conspicuously eyeing up your friend's finger to country wedding for a glimmer of matrimonial jewellery. When your friend relays the story to you, despite being mortified at first, you later decide that such unwavering attitudes are almost admirable in these rural pockets of the country. Do you think old people should adapt and wake up to new woke ways of thinking and behaving? Your initial reaction was, how impossibly dated. Do they not get the news in Somerset?
Yes, no, it was. Shall I briefly go through the story, or shall I say it readers, so listeners can understand? So yes, I was at this wedding in Somerset with a friend of mine, Holly, who's the same age as me, 33. And yes, she was standing at reception and two old ladies came up, grabbed her left hand and peered at it. And they dropped it and sort of looked a bit sad and said, oh, just checking. So they were checking to see if she had an engagement ring, which she doesn't, she's single. And I was, yes, as I write in the piece, initially furious on Holly's behalf. And I thought, well, it's 2018 and how outrageous. And, you know, she's a brilliant, single, independent woman. And then I sort of checked myself a bit because I did think, actually, do you know what? Certain, you know, habits or certain things like that, you can imagine online there might be sort of outrage. The sort of Twitter brigade might get very cross about that sort of thing. But actually, really, was anyone harmed? No. So I do think certain old habits and certain old ideas really aren't the end of the world.
So arguably, are young people so woke these days that they're unable to have any fun at all? They're in a perpetual state of outrage?
I do think there is a perpetual state of outrage that exists, whether it's, to the old ladies picking up your hand and checking you've got an engagement ring on, or some bad joke on Twitter that wasn't meant the way that whoever tweeted it meant, and it gets taken the wrong way. I think this sort of, everyone is angry the whole time. There's this constant mob and this feeling of aggression and outrage at everything. And sometimes basically I think everyone should sit back, take a deep breath and relax a bit and think, do you know what, let's not get ourselves into a total state of frenzy for 24 hours on Twitter or on social media about something that someone said. Let's just sort of chill out a bit.
You mentioned in your piece that it's fashionable these days to be outraged by such outdated opinions.
Yeah.
When you were working at Tatler, did you receive some memorable correspondence on some of your articles on poshness?
I tell you what it was at Tatler, we didn't so much receive articles about poshness, although there was one moment actually when I'd written a piece. Oh, actually, there was a Tatler documentary that was made called Posh People. It was on the BBC a few years ago. And I made the mistake, I subsequently realised, of referring to a brown Labrador as a brown Labrador when actually they're chocolate Labradors. And we got a letter about that. And that's part of the reason that I sort of so love Tatler. I mean, imagine being so outraged that you would then write a letter, quite rightly, pointing out that I was wrong and they were indeed chocolate Labradors. I just loved it for that. So we got certain letters like that. The thing that was difficult with Tatler and the line that we always tried to tread is that of many magazines, Tatler has an enormously wide demographic in terms of age, actually. So teenagers in their boarding school dormitories might be flicking through it. Dowager duchesses who are 90 might be flicking through it. So we had to talk to everyone, or try to at least. And I did a couple of slightly risque pieces while I was there. I think we did a spanking etiquette at one point. And I think we got some letters about that. But, you know, keeping everyone happy all the time is quite difficult.
About the chocolate Labrador. Yes. That was not ironic. It was completely genuine.
No, completely genuine. Probably meant. And I kind of love that. I mean, you sort of roll your eyes and think, oh, God, but how brilliant that someone did feel very strongly that I had got it wrong and that actually they should be chocolate Labradors. And thank God, you know, now I can go around for the rest of my life talking about them properly as chocolate Labradors instead of brown Labradors. Quite right.
And was the correspondence sent in as a letter or as an email?
It was a letter.
Oh, good.
It was a letter. And in fact, actually once at Tatler, I got a fax and we had someone who was doing work experience for us at the time and they sort of came over with this bit of paper as if they didn't know what it was, as if it was a sort of medieval bit of scroll, and put it down very ceremoniously on my desk. So we got all sorts in Tatler, yeah.
That is brilliant. Actually, at the Oldie, we have...
Yeah, you must get all sorts, right?
Yeah, we do.
Telegrams. Telegrams.
Yeah, we get telegrams. But interestingly, and some of my friends are... So I'm 28. My friends are amazed that one of our contributors files his copy as a written note.
Love it.
So I think he probably is one of the...
Very proper.
Yeah, very, very proper. That's Wilfred Diaz.
Love it. So brilliant.
It's better, a better sort of remedy is to laugh at the very silliness of the poshness.
I think if you can, it's better to laugh at everything in life, really, and not take anything too seriously, ultimately.
Recipe.
Yes, I think. But, yeah, I mean, at Tatler, definitely, you can't, talking about the sort of posh world, or the, I know lots of people hate the word posh, I kind of try and use it ironically, the aristocratic world, or what have you, you can't take it too seriously these days. You've got to be sort of tongue-in-cheek about it. So that was the line we tried to tread on the magazine, being sort of respectful, but tongue-in-cheek at the same time.
Mm. So I've got a few examples of various conventions that I'd like to get your opinion on.
Okay, well, I'm nervous. I get it wrong.
Are they outdated or still examples of good manners?
Okay.
And in sensible society to be expected?
Okay.
So thank you letters.
Mm.
What do you think?
I mean, it slightly depends whether it's weddings or it's a dinner party or a, you know, kitchen supper with a friend. I think very grand things, weddings, I'm thinking about, or actually Christmas presents, I think still a letter. I think for a lot of dinners or lunches or a more casual thing, if you send an email very quickly, as in the next day, and you put some thought into that email, and it's not just a string of emojis and a couple of kisses, I think that is acceptable. I think you can't leave it 5 days and then dash off an email. But I am classic. I mean, actually, I've got a thank you letter rolling around in my handbag at the moment, getting grubby and smudged, for a dinner that I went to 2 weeks ago. And I sometimes send the holding email as well when it gets too late, saying, oh my God, I'm so sorry, I haven't written yet, it's coming, which
it's
is sort of pathetic. I mean, it's terrible. But I am just one of those people who seems to schlep around thank you letters for weeks before I actually find a postbox, which is complete lunacy. So it sort of does depend, I still think, on the situation. A letter for grand things, an email you can get away with if it's very quickly afterwards.
So a WhatsApp or a text message?
Not unless it's your absolute best friend,
yeah.
And it was something very casual, I would, no, probably not send a WhatsApp.
So table plans.
Mm.
Boy, girl. Or do you feel like everyone should be able to sit wherever they like?
No, I think table... Again, it sort of depends on the situation, but I think everyone likes a table plan, don't they? I mean, instead of that awful thing where you all shuffle through to the kitchen or the dining room, whatever, and then everyone... that horrible thing when someone says, oh, just find a place, and you think... It's like being back at school again and being picked for the netball team. And what if you know, everyone sort of hurries away to a place and you're left out and you then have to go and sit on the edge somewhere.
Right, and so, you end up sitting next to the person that you travelled
to
the event with.
You just spent half an hour sort of doing small talk with and it was excruciating anyway. So I think we love a plasmon, don't we? I think that helps everyone out.
Absolutely. So, madam and sir, when you are addressing somebody for the first time...
Mm-hmm. I am trying to think of where I've even come across that. I don't think I... No, I think we probably don't have too much.
So we had somebody who was on work experience in the office and they were answering the phone and it was, hello sir, how can I help you?
Oh, I quite like that.
And then, no problem, madam. And I thought that sir was fine, but I thought madam was too much.
Well, I suppose some women, you know, for... woke 2018 might get offended at becoming madam, might they? I tell you what, actually, I did used to, in my gap year, classic sort of tragic gap year student, I worked at what was formerly the General Trading Company just off Sloane Square, and there were, you know, 20 gap year, useless gap year members of staff, and we all used to sort of just generally be completely useless, go and have a cigarette out the back in our lunch break and then slope off to the pub at 6:30. But there... we were, it was madam and sir. And that's, I think that's fine. As long as you're not saying it could come across as sort of too obsequious or fawning in a way.
Mm.
But I think you very rarely hear that these days.
Yeah.
Maybe nice when you do, but not the end of the world if you don't.
Yeah. Opening the door for elders, seniors or authorities?
Yeah, 100% down with this. Weirdly, at my boarding school, Wickham Abbey, there was a system hideously called the cocky. It was referred to as the cocky system. And one of those things that, you know, boarding schools these days hopefully might have stamped out, but the cocky system basically meant that if you were in a corridor and there was an older girl approaching you, you had to stand and hold the door open. And it was so terrifying in your first year when everybody else was older than you. I would sort of sometimes, it was between lessons, stand there for about 5 minutes, pinned back against the wall, holding this door, lest I go through and then what might happen is that someone would go, oh, that new girl, Sophia Manicucci, is incredibly cocky because she didn't hold the door open for me. But I still think, you know, I love it when, say, my boyfriend would hold the door open for me. Again, it comes back to slightly my piece. I just think some people might scream and say, no, these days you shouldn't have to hold the door open for women, or you shouldn't open the door of a car for a woman to get out. But how lovely if people do, actually. Yeah. And I don't think it's going to cause anyone, apart from maybe the Twitter brigade, to have a heart attack if that happens. I think it's very nice.
It's a nice thing to have done. Weddings. White dress at a wedding. Mm-hmm. Is that...
for the bride, I'm guessing? Not anyone else?
Yeah.
Oh, as in for the bride. Guests?
No. For, okay. Well, actually, both. Do you think that in 2018 a bride should be able to wear what on earth she wants?
And also, what about female guests?
And then the female guests.
Okay, let's talk about the wedding. I think a bride should be able to wear absolutely what she wants. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, I went to a friend of mine, an old school Wickham friend of mine. She was marrying her wife. It was the first, I think it was the first gay wedding I've ever been to. And Carly was in a very beautiful bride's dress. And Bells, my friend, was in a sort of white jumpsuit that she'd had specially made. And that was, it was, I mean, I wailed, I think, more at that wedding than any wedding I've been to. It was so moving that they could, you know, now do that and have a wedding. Mm-hmm. So I think brides should be able to wear what they want. I will tell you what I can't bear with brides' dresses, though, is the sort of fuss about it, the 500 appointments and that having, you know, various, I'm not married, various friends of mine are married and I love them all, but the sort of, even the sensible ones, when they get engaged and suddenly it's, oh, I've got a dress fitting here, or oh, I've got a dress fitting there, can you come? And that all gets a bit exhausting. So just wear what you want, but pick a dress and don't make all of your friends come to the appointments. Yeah. And also don't set up WhatsApp groups and send endless pictures. I had a friend of mine who I love very much, but she set up a special WhatsApp group for all her wedding dress fittings with about six girlfriends on it. And we just got hundreds of pictures. Very sweet, but exhausting. And then in terms of guests, I think, again, it sort of depends on the bride. If you probably shouldn't go in white still.
Yeah.
I actually did wear to this, my friend's wedding the other day, Bells and Carly, I had a long maxi dress that was, I would say, very pale pink, and I was worried that it was a bit too close, but it was patterned as well, so I think I got away with it. But I think you probably shouldn't go in a long white
and
dress.
And nobody critiqued it.
Nobody critiqued
that's
it.
That's good.
Yeah.
Sophia has just written her first work of fiction called The Plus One that will be published on the 9th of August by HarperCollins. It's already been met with great acclaim with those lucky enough to have got their hands on it. Jilly Cooper, the queen of rompy literary fiction, claims the sex is amazing. It makes me feel like a nun. And it has been recommended to fans of Helen Fielding, the great author of legendary Bridget Jones, and Bryony Gordon, the well-known Telegraph writer and a reformed party girl. The plus one is defined as a person who accompanies an invited person to a wedding or a reminder of being single, alone, and absolutely plus none. I imagine at Tatler you had some fabulous plus one occasions.
Yes, the parties at Tatler were pretty phenomenal. The invitations, those very thick invitations that would land on your desk. In fact, this is the first summer, having left Tatler in November, that I feel like I've slightly fallen off the list a bit. So there have been things going on, like the Serpentine party and the V&A summer party, and I was like, oh, seem to have not been invited to it. So they're amazing. But actually, I'm not really much of a... people always used to say, oh, the parties, they must be amazing. I'm not much of a party animal. I'm a kind of young fogey, and that my favourite thing is to be on the sofa, reading something or watching something, and then in bed at 10 o'clock is sort of my ideal evening. It's so tragic, but I love it. I love a good wedding. That's very fun. But big parties, I sort of go early and then disappear early. That's my idea.
At least you see the main bit
time.
By going early.
Yeah, exactly.
Is the book semi-autobiographical? The reference to Posh magazine, I was thinking of in particular, it sounds a lot like Tatler.
Yes, so my book, The Plus One, is about a character called Polly, who's just turned 30, and she's a bit down in the dumps. She's been single for a long time. She works for this magazine called Posh, but she's a bit bored and doesn't quite know which direction her life is going in. It's sort of aimless, I think. She lives in a damp flat with a gay oboist called Joe. Anyway, and then one day at this magazine, Posh, she gets sent up to go and interview the playboy son of a duke in his castle in Yorkshire. And it sort of all unfolds from there. Da, da, da. So yes, obviously, the fact that Polly works at a Posh magazine and I worked at Tatler for 5 years is fairly autobiographical. There are probably other storylines that, yes, are quite close to home. But I think that's generally good. The case with first novels. It's sort of astonishing. You know, when you're little, I don't know about you, but I was writing, you know, everyone writes stories about castles and dragons and princesses, and then somehow that sort of gets beaten out of us, that creativity, or many of us. So then when it came to writing this book, and I really wanted to write one, I open up my laptop, blank Word document, you think, oh God, what can I write about? So I thought, I know, posh magazines and marquises and playboys and love life.
And it all came naturally.
And, well, I mean, not totally naturally, but yes, that's where I've been.
Later questions was it written in a frenzy or was it slower and more laboured as a first book, I suppose?
It was quite a long time coming. I think it took about eventually 2.5 years. And it's not like, I mean, I hope my book makes people laugh, but I know it's not going to sort of win the Booker Prize. It's just a sort of very jolly, rompy read that I hope people enjoy. So it possibly did take me too long, but I was working full time at the time. So I used to get to the Pret-a-Manger opposite Vogue House, where Tatler's based, very early in the morning. I'd do sort of an hour before work and then an hour over lunch. But then I'd have great stretches when I didn't really look at it. And eventually, I just sort of, last year, I gave myself a kick up the butt and I thought, right, you've got to do this, come on. So I took a couple of weeks off and really sort of tried to blitz the ending. So yeah, fits and starts, I would say.
Gosh, I'm impressed with your work ethic. It's good.
Well, I mean, no, we're all our own worst critics, aren't we? I feel like I was incredibly lazy about it, and actually I'm supposed to be working on book two at the moment, and that's going to have to be done much faster, which I actually think is good. I'm gonna take myself off to, I'm trying to find somewhere in South Wales. If any oldie readers know of anywhere in South Wales, let me know. I'm gonna escape London, turn my Wi-Fi off, and just immerse myself, and I think then a storyline, if you live a storyline in your head solidly for 2 months, I think it hopefully will come together more easily.
That sounds like a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
So I've seen that it will be available as an audiobook.
Yes.
And who is narrating it?
I am narrating it. I went to a studio in North London a few weeks ago and spent, we had 4 days earmarked, and actually we did it in 3 because I tend to gabble and talk very quickly. So the sound engineer was amazed. It was brilliant. He said, cool, got through this very quickly. So hopefully it's understandable when people come to listen to it. But I loved it. It was so fun. I was nervous initially when my publisher asked if I wanted to do it, because there are various characters in there that require various accents. And I thought, crumbs, I don't want to sort of come off a bit low with a few characters. And then actually Charlotte, my lovely publisher, said, no, it's first person, so you can just do it all in Polly's voice. So that's what I did. But I still love being in that booth with my earphones on, sort of gesticulating with my hands and doing, I suppose I did a touch of, there is a French fashion assistant, and there are various people that I did probably as a little lilt in there. Hopefully nothing too awful. But I really enjoyed it. It was fabulous, apart from the sex scenes. The sex scenes were slightly cringe, but in front of a sort of young sound engineer, but I've only got myself to blame for those, so.
Brilliant. And so, have you sold the film rights?
I have had a few meetings, I suppose I can say, recently about film rights. I mean, I think that's the dream, isn't
it
really?
Is it film or a TV series?
Well, this is the other debate, because I've sort of had meetings for both. TV is obviously kind of king these days.
Yeah.
You know, it's, think of all the series, you know, I've just finished Patrick Melrose last night, which was so,
I've heard that's fantastic.
So brilliant. Benedict Cumberbatch was just phenomenal. Actually, as was ever, Jessica Raine plays his mother. I mean, it was just superb. And again, a very English scandal. I suppose that wasn't a TV series. It was 3 parts with Hugh Grant, but it was brilliant. TV is so good these days.
Yeah.
So I've had sort of meetings potentially about both. So, I mean, God, to be offered either, what an extraordinary dream come true.
And do you think you would write the film script? Would the script, if it was...
Again, if I was, God, to be offered that opportunity, I'd be so thrilled. I don't know. I think I'd quite want to be involved. And I think for things like this, a bit like, not to compare myself, but I think a bit like Julian Fellowes with Downton Abbey, you need someone who sort of, he obviously knows that world inside and out. He knows what fork should go where. He knows what sort of footman should be wearing. He very much understands that world. I feel like with my book, because it touches on sort of castles and the aristocracy, you need someone who does understand shooting. For example, I've got a big shooting weekend in there, and there's a visit to there's a Sheikh's house at one stage that they all go and stay in. You need someone who sort of understands the nuances, and I worry that, say, dream come true and it went off to LA, that might get lost somewhat. So.
Yes, I can imagine.
And also, it's my baby, so I just would really love to be involved. Yeah. But I feel like that sort of leaping ahead about 100 steps and sounds very arrogant, saying, yes, when I'm in LA and writing my own film script. So, I mean, touch wood, that could happen, but we'll have to see.
Yeah, fingers crossed. If that did happen,
yes.
Who would play Polly, the protagonist, in an ideal world? If you could...
Oh, weirdly, my sister used to work at Independent Talent, an agency, and she read it very early on, and it was music to my ears. She said, oh my God, I can just so see this. It's like a sort of, I can absolutely see like a Richard Curtis, this being made. Oh gosh, and so we debated, but she said, actually, I think what you'd want is a sort of unknown ingenue, in a way, taking it on. Because I suppose I'm trying to think who I really love. If you had someone who was already quite well known, was it Saoirse Ronan and Lady
Bird? Oh, yeah, she
I'm just trying to think of young actresses. I mean, but if you had someone who's really well known, they'd sort of bring their own character, I suppose. It would be quite good to have a new name. And there's always, you know, as people always sort of, there's a lot of hand wringing in newspapers about sort of, are there too many posh actors and actresses? That's kind of what this I think would need. Jasper, the Marquis of Milton, would have to be whoever the sort of next James Norton is, or...
I mean, Hugh Grant, would he be too old?
Hugh Grant, I'm much older, I love him, and I think he was absolutely sensational in A Very English Scandal. He'd be too old to play Jasper. He could play maybe Jasper's dad, the Duke.
Oh, okay.
He might be quite a good Duke. Or he could play Peregrine, the editor of Posh, actually. He might be quite good at that. So we'll see. But I think unknowns, in a way, you could have maybe more fun with it, and then they don't bring the big sort of starry name, but I mean, what a like dream conversation to be having anyway.
Yeah. 9th of August.
9th of August. So, D-Day.
And that's
hardback.
And then paper.
Audiobook and Kindle. To buy all three.
And perfect for beachy holiday.
Perfect for beachy, yeah. It reading. Won't take you months to read. Commuting. It is not War and Peace. You can whip through it. And as I said, I just really want to make people laugh.
Thank you very much for coming to this edition of the Oldie Podcast. No